ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not publicized. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
The best for... Piece of stinking filth.
Setting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there.
Well, greetings, programs. This is Clint Richardson filling in for Shali today. Thought we'd take a little journey today into a couple of concepts that have been disturbing me of late. Now, I've talked about these books before that a couple of my audience members have been kind enough to purchase and send me. I always appreciate it when people do that because it's so hard for me to get out and get these things, find them sometimes. A lot of the books I get and use are obscured. Purposefully obfuscated, not generally known. They certainly are not on the shelves of your local grocery store or Target. And generally, they're hard to find even in stores like Barnes & Noble. These types of quote-unquote booksellers who really only sell what the Latin word for it is adversaria. No. Basically, empty knowledge. Empty knowledge or useless knowledge. This is the same concept as the knowledge of good and evil, basically, which, again, there's no such thing in nature. These are only concepts of the mind of man. And so we have a bunch of useless opinions and knowledge from this fruit that we pluck daily. From this tree, which keeps us from the garden. Now, one of the things I find so fascinating about this concept of the garden, you hear it referred to as the Garden of Eden, you hear it referred to as paradise, you hear it referred to as a lot of different things. But what no one ever tells you, and what took me a while to actually figure out, is that the word garden, for some reason, the word garden in the Bible, when I was looking at it earlier, and if a friend actually made this known to me, that the word garden means prison. And I found that to be a very strange concept when I first heard it, knowing that eventually I'd figure it out, because everything has such a beautiful, wonderful purpose. When you finally figure out the message, when you finally figure out what the Bible's actually trying to tell you, what the metaphor actually hinges on, then, of course, it becomes beautiful. But you have to be seeking the beauty, not the darkness. You have to be seeking the light. And that's really hard for people, I know. But if you're always seeking the light, if you're always seeking the knowledge, the true knowledge, not the fruit, not the fig, apple, Well, then what you find is that the word prison, as all words, is a general term. It doesn't mean that it's good or bad. Because remember, there's no evil or good in nature. The only thing that's evil in a true sense would be anything artificial, because, of course, that would be unnatural. That would be opposed to nature. So all art, technology, anything that's designed to take nature, twist it, and bend it to man's will would be considered quote-unquote evil. But only, again, in a sense that you have to take it with a kind of a grain of salt. Is it really evil? Is it... well, no, because there is no good and evil. What there is adversaria. What is adversarial to the flow and harmony of nature? And of course that comes from man. Every single aspect of that comes from man. But you say the beaver builds dams. Doesn't that affect nature? Well, certainly the beaver has an instinctual quality within its very existence that builds natural dams. That is quite different from man going in, putting up a dam without even thinking about the consequences really to what's downstream, or for that matter upstream, without really considering that anything man-made is temporary. And if you think about what that means, my God, if everything man-made is temporary, then what about all the roads? What was the thinking behind putting roads across the entire country? Because eventually those are going to just buckle and fold and be developed, enveloped back into the earth. I mean, everything's temporary. What about dams? Everything's temporary. How about these huge nuclear reactors? Everything's temporary. So what's going to happen to all these things, right? See, this is adversarial. It's not built according to nature. It's built to prevent, to harm, to redirect, to resource, to do all the things it shouldn't be doing. So why was the Garden of Eden then a prison? Well, what I've found, why I've been on this kick about a monastery for so long, why do I want to get land, and why do I want to put a monastery on that land, as much land as I could possibly get? Well, you see, a felon, a criminal, someone who has been had all their rights stripped from them is considered legally as dead, in the aspect that all his rights has been taken away. Well, guess what? A truly religious man following the law of nature under God, God's law, as they call it, which is recognized, of course, by law, is also a man who has had all his legal rights stripped away because he no longer carries the persona, the property of that state to carry any of those rights. In other words, he reserves all his natural rights and says no to any false rights. Now, imagine if it, back in the day where this was a known entity anyway, if you're a criminal and you want to, you know you're going to prison, right? And you know prison is a bad word when it comes to the state, when it comes to legal, you know that it's a bad place. You don't want to go there. But there's also this other prison that you know about. It's called a sanctuary. And it's a monastery, it's a church, it's a religious society that has been established and is officially and is actually recognized by as a sanctuary, which means simply that it's immune from the sanctions of legal law. In other words, no punishments of law can be conducted, no police officers can come in there, no military can come in there and forcibly remove somebody. So it's a prison of Eden. That's what a sanctuary is. It's a place to live a religious life, to actually follow the correct law. You've just done something against the legal law, so you have a choice. You can abandon all of that, go to a beautiful, wonderful place, follow the law, and be in a prison of your own choosing, which we'd call a sanctuary, or you can go to one of these horrific holding cell prisons, which I don't even have to say, you know, why that's bad. So, you know, what was the Garden of Eden? The Garden of Eden was a place where man essentially was kept from interfering with nature, interfering with nature's flow and harmony. He practiced the law of nature and the laws and respected the laws of nature. Laws of nature are different than the law of nature. Law of nature is the law of man in the respect to his place in nature, whereas the laws of nature are, of course, how nature works itself. Things that are undeniable and self-existent. You start respecting both, you have a powerful combination. You have a sanctuary. You have a beautiful, beautiful prison. That might sound weird to people. It might sound, religious. Who knows what people think of that type of concept. But when you understand the concept, there is such a beauty and fantastic, just emotional thing about it that I can't even put it into words. But you have to be able to bring yourself around to, again, always seeing or seeking what is that beautiful truth. What is the nature behind these concepts? And, you know, more often than not, I find that most words, the word God, you know, most of these terms are just generic terms. They don't mean anything until you qualify them, right? Until you say what you mean by the word God. Whose law are you following? Which God are you under? And see, what I found out, what I figured out, is that we're all under gods. And it's a very difficult thing to admit, come to, again, because you're always seeking the truth. And when you're seeking the truth, you can come to no other contemplation that you will eventually at some point be trapped under, which is not a bad thing. Again, it's a term. It's just a generic term. You're going to be trapped under one or the other God. Whether that God is man and its adversarial creations, its legal systems, its contracts, etc., or whether that God is the God of nature, however you want to define that. I've certainly defined that in the way that the Bible defines it. I will say this: there is another way to let you understand what the Bible truly defines as God, and it's a little surprising, actually. In fact, I'm going to go to look at my book here real quick and pull up these words, because I kind of think this is it in a nutshell. You want to know what the difference between what is God and what isn't God? It's in two words. And this is from page 170 in my book. Universe. Well, universe is one of the terms used to just define Jehovah, and I'm coming out of Webster's 1828. Universe is a noun, universitas in Latin. The collective name of heaven and earth. Collective name of heaven and earth. And all that belongs to them. That includes you. The whole system of created things. Now, you listen to that, you say, well, gee, that's reasonable. That's not really religious in its overture. You just have to be able to define what heaven and what's the difference between heaven and earth, right? Which in the case of describing it that way, you're talking about the earth as it is compared to the quote-unquote heavens, which is, again, a word used in all of Roman and Greek and all other mythologies when you're talking about the stars and the entirety of the quote-unquote universe. Just makes sense. Oh, no, but that means a pearly gated kingdom on a cloud. No, it doesn't. No, no, that's not the meaning of the word. Go look it up. Go look at the intent. Seek the beauty, not the fiction, not the adversarial. Don't bring these Satanist adversarial concepts into what the meaning of the Bible actually is. So we're talking about universe. If God is the universe, the collective name of the heaven and earth, and again, Jehovah being a verb, so all that is in existence, self-existence, all that belongs to heaven and earth, the whole system of created things, that's a beautiful, again, a beautiful concept. It's simple, it's elegant. It doesn't have that religious overtone of the church. It's just a perfect small description of what God is, the universe. Then you have, so we have the verse. Now we have the opposite to that. Well, you can't know anything by what, unless you know what is the opposite of that word or that concept, right? You cannot know anything truly until you know what its opposite is. What is opposed to it, and what does it oppose? Well, if the universe, uni meaning one, or collective, self-existent thing, all working together in harmony, which is what all these alternative, religious, they all say the same thing. So what is the difference between one verse or monotheism and, well, it's adverse. What does adverse mean? It actually means adversus, or in Latin, or opposite. Something that is turned or turned away, to turn in the verb, right? So we have the universe, which is our nature, our very structure, our very souls, our everything we're connected to, everything that supports us, all of the created things, all of what is self is. In other words, everything not man-made is the universe. That's God. What is adverse to that? Well, anything that's opposite, turned away from that. Opposite, opposing. Well, these are the same words as Satan and Luciferian, false light. Anything that's opposite but presented as the same or similarity. And of course, there is no sameness when it comes to a simulation. Simulation is always false. There's never, in fact, that's a maxim of law. Simulation is never sameness. What is opposite? What is opposing? What is acting in a contrary direction? Conflicting, counteracting, as adverse winds. An adverse party in court. Figuratively, it means opposing desires, contrary to the wishes or the supposed good. Hence, unfortunate, calamitous, afflictive, pernicious, unprosperous. Of course, prosperous in the Bible doesn't have anything to do with money. As an adverse fate or circumstances, and basically in the verb transitive form to oppose. Well, again, you look up the word satanic or Satan, it means to oppose, to be opposed to be adversarial to. Adversarial. Adversarial. That's the definition of Satan. The adversary. So what do you have? You have the universe, the monotheistic notion of nature, all of nature, all of creation being as one God, and you have the adversary, the opposite to that, which is everything man-made. One is self-evident. One cannot be dismissed as something man-made, while the other can be nothing else but man-made. There is no, contrary to the many science fiction movies out there, there simply is no dark void coming to destroy everything. That's, again, a concept, a fiction, a figurative notion of what man does to nature. That's all any science fiction can be, because where does science come from? The more you look into science, the more ridiculous you realize it is. The more science gets away from its true point, its true nature, which is the study of the universe, the study of not the picking apart and destroying to decide what makes it tick, not the 1,500 nuclear tests against it, both surface and underground, if those actually happened, which I'm going to assume did. But who knows anymore, since we're disproving almost all of history at this point. And if you haven't caught some of Jan Irving's latest shows over there at Gnostic Media, I'm pleased to say that Jan has finally woken up to the rantings and ravings of the madman, Joe Atwill, who I've been openly against for quite some time, one who uses false characters in history to disprove other false characters in history, which I find to be insulting as a researcher. But yeah, there's some changes going on over there. There's some realizations. There's a lot of looking into history. We're finding, as we did on my show years ago and since, that most history is bunk. Most history, whether history existed at all, is really up for question at this point. History being, again, I really want you to understand this. When we talk about history, when we talk about man-made history, what are we talking about? Are we talking about the universe? Or are we talking about adverse? Well, unfortunately, history, all history, falls in the adverse. Remember, there's no history in the universe. History doesn't exist. Time is not relevant in the universe. Only in the adverse. There's no timeline in the universe. This is strictly a man-made concept. The deer and the antelope and the skunk do not get up each day according to a man-made contraption called a watch or an alarm clock. The the rooster does not crow because he has a man-made alarm clock, unnatural, that tells him what time it is. These are instinctual things. The rooster does not take Saturdays and Sundays off. He does not celebrate the Sabbath on Sundays because there is no such thing. The Sabbath is an everyday thing. Sabbath is not a day, you fools. Sabbath is to be follow the law of God at all times. There's no day. Oh, gosh, tell you what, guys, if you follow my law just one day out of the week, you worship me instead of all the adverse, worship the universe instead of all the adverse, just one day of the week, and the rest of the week, work your asses off for the machine, for the frickin' matrix, well, in hell, you can go to heaven because you observe the Sabbath. Does that really make sense to you? That we would worship our very structure, our very nature, and the rest of the day, the rest of the week, worship the adverse, everything that's opposite to that, everything that's turned away from it? No, doesn't make sense. And of course, the word day in the Bible can mean anything from a day to a week to a year to an age. Well, for God's sake, what is an age? So, what I want you to understand is that these are the two gods. However the second one, the adverse, presents itself to you or to us, can be a multitude of ways. It can be the Pope. It can be the Queen and King. It can be the President. It can be the local mayor and sheriff. It can be the judge that we have to appear in as something we are not. As a straw man. And by the way, we're gonna finally put to rest what the hell a straw man is. I don't want there to be any confusion for people. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, I told you that I got a book. A new book, which is actually an old book. It's called Out of Control. Out of Control by Kevin Kelly. Now, Kevin Kelly is the executive editor of Wired magazine. And the official title of this book, which I recommend people to get, is The New Biology of Machines, Social Systems, and the Economic World. So Out of Control, the new – out of control. First thing they say is that it's out of control. Why? Because it's adverse. It's not part of the universe. Out of Control, the New Biology of Machines, Social Systems, and the Economic World. Out of Control. Yes. The London Spectator says, not since H.G. Wells, the Fabian socialist, has there been another popular scientist, what the hell's a popular scientist, who has had the nerve to plunge into so many bold theories? I'll tell you who a popular scientist is. A popular scientist is someone like Neil Tyson deGrasse, or what's his name that's doing the Bill Nye, the science guy, who it recently came out, has no scientific background whatsoever and just uses a flattering false title, which, of course, we're not supposed to respect. But hey, Bill Nye, the science guy, has a new show saying he's going to save the world because he's a popular scientist. And then Neil Tyson deGrasse guy, which I take one look at and want to puke, apparently is popular scientist and acts the part. I can't even, there's no forgiveness for having any respect for people like this. I'm sorry. But I wanted to read the introduction because I want you to understand what you're facing, folks. What are you facing if you're not part of the universe? Now, the Bible is very clear that to go back to the universe, you have to be reborn into it. Oh, reborn into nature, right? Reborn to God. All that means is you start following God's law. You go back to as if you were a child, innocent and free of all the fictions and adversarial shit from man, all the things that are opposite and turned away from the universe, which are the adverse, which is the satanic shit that we all do every freaking day. And we go back to God. It's that simple. We go back to nature. We become, once again, the whole system of created things. We don't pretend that we're outside of that. We don't pretend like it's not our duty to protect that whole system of created things. We don't pretend that we don't belong to the universe, that we are somehow masters of it. We don't pretend to be its gods. The problem is you have all these people who do. And the only way they have power is by your respect of them, their flattering titles, their names, and most importantly, the products that they sell you, which is what? Well, they have nothing. They have absolutely nothing to give you but money. Money, the root of all evil, you see. What's the maxim of law again? While anything can be valued in money, money can be valued in nothing. Nothing! They give you nothing. In other words, they give you the opposite or adverse of something. You are getting nothing from these people. Literally sold to you in a fancy freaking currency that goes nicely in your wallet or slides nicely on your credit card. Now they've given you a chip to make it easier for them, I mean you, to be tracked and to be made their slave. Well, great, great. That's just wonderful. So let's talk about these gods and what their plans are. I'm going to read from the very, very introductory statement by Mr. Kevin Kelly. I want you to understand this book, keep in mind, was actually written Let's see, Library of Congress, Kevin Keeley and Knight Kelly, excuse me, in 1952 originally, Out of Control, The Rise of Neobiological Civilization, Kevin Kelly, a William Patrick book, includes biological references, biographical references, etc. And then re-copyrighted by Kevin Kelly in 1994. Let's see. So we've got the opening statement. The opening statement. Now, why, again, before I start this, remember, this is one of the books that the movie The Matrix is based on. We've already discussed Simulacrum and Simulation by Jean Baudrillard as being the main book, the one where there's so much plagiarization it's not funny, out of that book to make the movie. And once you read the book, you realize the movie is a pathetic attempt to take beautiful, beautiful writings of Jean Baudrillard and twist them and turn them as gods do, as the adverse would. And basically, if I were to sum up what Simulacrum and Simulation was about, obviously the name gives it away. Remember that a simulacrum is a copy without an original. Therefore, we could say the Bible is a simulacrum, because there is no original Bible, as much as people don't want to hear that. We could say therefore that Simulacrum and Simulation is a book about how the adverse has taken over the universe, how simulation has taken over the real, how the copies of things are worshipped when we have no idea that these copies, these statues, these marks, these signs, these symbols, these idols have no origin. We're worshiping something that, for all intents and purposes, is not even connected anymore to nature. It's been so dumbed down or just, you know, recreated into something completely new without any aspect or connection to nature. That's what we're worshiping. So what happens when we delve into the mind of this sick society? What was the quote? How does it go? No one's... I'll have to figure that quote. Sick society. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly fucking sick society. I want you to remember that quote. No measure of health at all to be a good little employee and earn mammon, nothingness, and believe that you have something that you do not. Here's what Kevin writes. Remember, I said, you will have a God, and you will, at some point, as the Bible instructs, you will need to make your election clear. What does that mean? Well, you're going to find out soon enough. You're going to find out soon enough that making your election clear means having nothing that the adverse can recognize, can identify you with. It means getting rid of everything. I'm sorry. You think that you've raised your family and you have an obligation to go to work every day, work 10 hours to support your quote-unquote family, your quote-unquote children, and your quote-unquote car and its insurance, and the house and its insurance, and all that shit. How do you tell somebody that's that deep in the Matrix, as we all were at some point, that you don't own your children? You abandon them at birth. They're now wards of the state, and they give you beneficial, like, spiritual jurisdiction. They give you beneficial right to raise the state's children, and that's why they can take them at any time. You don't own your home. You registered everything you own. You registered in the name of another. the surname, the straw man, which is property of government. In fact, you have nothing. You say, I can't leave this system after all I've worked for, all that I've paid for, in money that has no value. All the pieces of little paper that says I own this and I own that, how can I possibly give that up? I have to support my family. Oh, is that how it works? Well, let me tell you something. The legal realm defines United States as a family, or for that matter, any corporation. What happens when Clint Richardson marries Mary Smith? Well, Mary Smith, the person, becomes Mary Richardson, the person, which is part of the corporation of Clint Richardson, who is the head of quote-unquote household, meaning head of corporation, who is also responsible, as parents in the parents patria doctrine, for the well-being of those children. If those children do something under the family car doctrine, all these different doctrines, well, then the head of household is responsible. Why? Because the children aren't actually children. They're fucking agents of the father. Father means head or god of the corporation. So, in fact, you spend your whole fucking life supposedly supporting your family, supposedly bringing home the bacon, frying it up in a pan, but in fact, at the end of your life, you have nothing. Nothing! Because it's all been stolen from you clandestinely, because you've registered everything to the state, whose whole purpose is to take that property gladly and give it to the landholders. To steal your blood right, which is the very purpose of putting someone into citizenship, the attainder process, attainder meaning corruption of blood, so that the law no longer recognizes the blood, which is the highest right, and instead only recognizes the legal person's right, which is the lowest possible class you can be. It is akin to slave. This is why the slaves were brought up to citizens, and the citizens were brought down to citizenships. You became the slave class. The slave class is equal to... what do you think equal rights is? Oh, well, the slave class is now equal to the second tier of the slave class. Oh, well, congratulations. They should have told you right off what your status was, but instead you say, oh... Oh, those poor Negroes, now they're free. They're free, just like us, to be completely raped. To have everything stolen from us legally by the state. Oh, that's just wonderful. Have no idea that you're considered an enemy of the state. You have no idea what your frickin' status, your persona is. But the whole thing is designed to take everything that you think you own, give you a right, which is not a good thing, a legal right, not of God, not of blood, in other words, so that it can be stolen from you. And by the, you know, at the end of your life, what happens? Well, I was a good man. I worked my whole life. I have a military pension, and I have this, and I did this. And what? It's all based in money, which has no value. You've left your children nothing. At best, your children will be able to get out of the debt you're leaving them, because that's all money really is an IOU. Anybody left with money at the end, at the collapse, will have IOUs. They'll be worth nothing because nobody will accept them. No one's going to say, well, yeah, I'll take your IOU and I'll give them to someone else and we'll just keep trading these IOUs, these debt instruments. No, it's like a game of musical fucking chairs. You're going to be left with these IOUs, and no one's going to take them. Who in the right mind would take an IOU? Oh, well, no one's in their right mind, because we take IOUs all freaking day long. We trade our labor for them. Sure, I'll take 2,000 IOU dollars. I know they don't actually exist, but I'll take them anyway, and I'll invest them, and I'll. But they're worth nothing. But I spent $500,000 on my house. Yeah, well, what is 500,000 times zero? Because remember, anything can be valued in dollars, but nothing, money can be valued in nothing. So what did I spend? I spent $500,000 in nothingness. This is the adverse. This is the adversary. This is the money system. If you don't understand this, you still have this worship for gold and silver and real money. Real money. Real money. That word real is the same word as real estate. It doesn't mean real. Go to the dictionary. Look up the difference between what is real and what is real. Real estate does not mean that it is the real land. Real estate is property. So when you're saying real money, you're saying property. Who owns all property? Where does property come from? Does it come from the universe or does it come from the adverse? They work through your whole life. You think you supported a family. You think you did the right thing. And I'm not calling you bad for it. I'm just saying that the truth, if you want to know the truth, and a lot of people don't, the truth is that you've left your children with nothing. I talk to people all the time, and they tell me they can't possibly fathom giving up everything, giving up their straw man, doing what the Bible instructs them over and over to do. And I'm like, so what you're telling me, just to be clear, you're telling me that you would rather be stuck in the adverse, in hell, a debtor's hell, because everything you do is worthless, everything you spend has no value. You'd rather be in this trickery, this magical realm, where nothing is actually reality, and you would rather leave your children with absolutely nothing of their own, instead of leaving that system and spending your life working next to your son, your daughter, your dog, your wife, your husband. You would rather actually stay in that system of the adversary, where money is the root of all evil, and you pursue nothing but money in mammon, instead of working next and side by side to your children and your family in a farm, growing and doing things only for the betterment of yourself, your children, your family, and your friends, your like-minded, law-abiding fellow, whatever you call them, neighbors. Neighbors is the term the Bible uses, right? Love your neighbor. You would rather spend time competing for money, which is of no value whatsoever, than having the opportunity. You would rather send your children to public school than actually teaching them and having them insisting that they read the Bible the law every day, as the Bible instructs. You would rather your children be completely adversarial or public-minded than to come out of that Babylonian system and be by and with your children as much as you want. Because the only thing you're concerned with now is the farm, the land, the true sense of everything that is the whole system of created things, the universe, your little patch of it, something that can actually pass to your children by the blood, something that can actually tangibly give to your children, because and not to mention, your whole freaking life has been devoted now to creating something that you can pass to your children. Why are your children still so loving and still so happy? And why do they want to live with you instead of moving to New York City like I did to experience the world? Well, because my parents had nothing to offer me. I sensed this when I was young. I sensed all this was wrong. I didn't know it until now. I didn't know it until I wrote this book and understand the S-cheat, the cheaters, the fishers of men. I didn't understand that until now. Now I do. Now I know why children are so eager to leave their home, why parents are so shitty to their children, because there's no pride. There's nothing that people have. Children want their parents to die so that they can inherit what their parents have. That is no different than kings. Kings, sons who would kill their fathers to become kings to gain their inheritance. That's the same concept that goes down the whole thing. But you see, we're coming to a time now where there is no inheritance. See, that's the con game, is that the inheritance of this generation that's going to be dying in the next 10 to 20, 30 years, the kids are getting the inheritance, which is literally nothingness, money at best, title to property that they're probably going to have to sell to pay the estate tax, right? At the point where, at some point in the future, people are going to have no idea what it would be to actually have their own stuff, their own land to harvest, their own livestock, their own sanctuary, their own monastery, their own prison, where the legal law cannot come, where legal agents are not allowed, where no artificial titles, where no artificial anything of the adverse is allowed to set foot, where everyone is self-responsible. See, that's not going to be an option in the future anywhere but in the universe. And the universe is going to be completely cut off from everybody that stays in the adverse. How do you know who's going to be in the adverse? They're going to have the mark of the beast. They're going to be beasts with a mark, which we already carry in our wallets, the little chips and everything else that identifies us. And at some point in the future, apparently 2030, that's when everybody's going to be registered under Caesar. Caesar just means district. District means distraint, distress, and seizure. Everybody's going to be seized as property. Everybody's going to have the mark of identity, i.e. they are a beast, a four-footed beast of burden working for mammon. It's just figurative speech. That's our future. Unless we are, quote-unquote, born again, which is this beautiful concept that's been ruined by the fucking church. Unless we go back to our childlike nature, we follow the laws of nature, we become beautiful creatures again, part of the whole system of created things. Are you starting to get what the Bible's really about? Because nothing I'm saying here is religious. Nothing I'm saying here has anything to do with any religious symbol. I'm not asking you to wear a cross. I'm only telling you to follow the law. It's so freaking simple. What we're experiencing here, folks, is literally a war. It's the same war that has been raging since the dawn of man's inventions. However, we're getting to the point, as you all know, especially if you listen to Jules or you listen to Patrick Jordan when he comes on this show, and we talk about all of these future tech and transhumanism and all this stuff. We're coming into the time of, well, what does the Bible say? It says the coming of the Son of Man, the time of the coming of the Son of Man, it will be as it was in the days of Noah. Well, so maybe we should go look and see what it was in the days of Noah. And you find that it's very similar to what was now. It was chaotic. It was lawless. It was not good. It's just like it is today. Now, there's some that speculate that the coming of the Son of Man is going to happen on September 23rd, 2017. I remember I was doing a show with KW a couple years ago, and I said, is there a time limit? You know, is there like a point in time where we're not going to be able to leave this system? I know that the fucking Pope opens up doors and then closes doors and calls it a jubilee and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And just out of nowhere, he says, yeah, September 23rd, 2017. I'm like, well, that was specific. So he tells me to go look, and I'm sure a lot of my audience has already, you know, discovered that on September 23rd, 2017, that's when the stars align. And as the Bible says, and I'm going to paraphrase here, there's 12 stars in her hair. This is the Virgin, which is Virgo. The sun is at her head, and the moon is at her feet. And the 12 stars make a crown. And it's the only time in all of history since zero or whatever it was, I don't know, that the stars actually align in the figurative notion of the look to the heavens meaning stars, and, you know, for signs, that kind of thing. Now, there are those who firmly believe that is the quote-unquote coming of the Son of Man. If you want to check that out, you're certainly welcome to go to YouTube. There's plenty of people, lots of them freaks, who have covered this. It's basically just an astrological sign in the heavens, nothing more, nothing less. It could be something, it could be nothing. I'm not saying it's anything. I am saying, however, that we certainly have surpassed any notion of the days of Noah. We have outdone ourselves. I'm sure that the personification of the adverse, the Satan, is just sitting back, just smiling ear to ear with what has been created to oppose nature, to oppose our very structure, our very self, our very part in all of this. Whether that be the case or not, it's really not the point, because, of course, the Bible is a timeless document. It's just merely saying that that at the time when we go back to our wicked ways, then this is the kind of plagues and shit that's going to start hitting us, right? So, I mean, it's really quite reasonable. You can pretty much mark the modern diseases of man that are being created both from and because of, as a side effect of a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs and everything, the purposeful vaccinations, the purposeful poisoning of the skies and everything. You can pretty much say that all the plagues are currently ready to go. They're in the barrel. Out of control, the new biology of machines, social systems, and the economic world. So, this is the second book that was plagiarized to make the Matrix movie. And this is verified by an interview with Keanu Reeves, who says, I had to read three books, that is, before I could even look at the script to become Thomas Anderson and, i.e., Neo, on the outside of the Matrix, right? So this was the second book that was mentioned. The third book was a psychology book that eventually we'll talk about. Now, here is where I want you to understand what your gods are going to be. The Maid and the Born. The Maid and the Born. What is made and what is birthed? I am sealed in a cottage of glass that is completely airtight. Inside, I breathe my exhalations. Yet the air is fresh, blown by fans. My urine and excrement are recycled by a system of ducts, pipes, wires, plants, and marsh microbes, and redeemed into water and food, which I can eat. tasty food, and good water. Last night it snowed outside. Inside this experimental capsule, it is warm, humid, and cozy. This morning, the thick interior windows drip with heavy condensation. Plants crowd my space. I'm surrounded by large banana leaves, huge splashes of heartwarming yellow-green color, and stringy vines of green beans entwining every vertical surface. About half the plants in this hut are food plants, and from these I harvested my dinner. I am in a test module for living in space. My atmosphere is fully recycled by the plants and the soil they are rooted in, and by the labyrinth of noisy ductwork and pipes strung throughout the foliage. Neither the green plants alone, nor the heavy machines alone, are sufficient to keep me alive. Let me read that again. Neither the green plants alone, nor the heavy machines alone, are sufficient to keep me alive. Rather, it is the union of sun-fed life and oil-fed machinery that keeps me going. Now, within this shed, the living and the manufactured have been unified into one robust system whose purpose is to nurture further complexities at the moment, me. Now, I want you to think about this, folks. Have we, as a society, do we qualify in a similar fashion? Have we sufficiently mixed nature and technology and call it life? Well, in fact, we have. Do you remember we talked with Greg, for instance, Greg Kinonis, who was in the oil industry, and we talked about how if the oil Well, first of all, that the reason for the population explosion that we've had basically boils down to two things, medicine, or i.e. hygiene, and oil. Almost every product we use has something to do with oil, whether it's the fuel to make it, the plastics, etc., right? And we speculated, or he speculated, and others have certainly speculated, that if the oil disappeared tomorrow, it stopped flowing, it stopped being delivered to us as we've become so accustomed, that 70% of mankind would perish. Why? Because we're dependent in an almost 100% capacity upon oil. Oil is, of course, something that is natural, being stripped from its source and resourced into something man-made and therefore adversarial to the universe. Okay, oil's not a good thing when it becomes more important and more valued than the very blood that flows through people's veins. Now, I can't stress that enough. You'll probably disagree with me, but I'll tell you one thing. There's one thing that is keeping us all alive, this overcrowded planet, as they look at it, and that is oil. All they got to do is trigger a shortage of oil, and they'll trigger a population decline. That is just one little way that we have, what did it say? The union of sun-fed life and oil-fed machinery keeps us going. That's a really scary thought. I want it to be scary for you, because the only way that that's going to be rectified is if you leave the system. Leave the adverse, go back to the universe. Go back to what actually supports you. I mean, for God's sake, folks, we eat oil. Do you know that? We eat oil. We do every, I mean, it's amazing what we do with oil. It's just, it's scary. I'll continue here. Glass of water. What is clearly happening inside this glass capsule is happening less clearly at a great scale on Earth in the closing years of this millennium. The realm of the born, as all that is nature, and the realm of the maid, all that is humanly constructed, are becoming one. And isn't that their goal? Machines are becoming biological, and the biological is becoming engineered. Is this a true statement? Fuck yeah, it is. Again, just listen to Jules. Just listen to all the things we've warned about. Machines are becoming biological, and the biological is becoming engineered. That's banking on some ancient metaphors. Images of a machine as organism and an organism as machine are as old as the first machine itself. But now, those enduring metaphors are no longer poetry. They are becoming real, and profitably so. Profitably real. This book is about the marriage of the born and the maid. Are you seeing where this is has to do with the Matrix now? By extracting the logical principle of both life and machines and applying each to the task of building extremely complex systems, technicians are conjuring up contraptions that are at once both made and alive. This marriage between life and machines is one of convenience, because, in part, it has been forced by our current technical limitations. For the world of our own making has become so complicated that we must turn to the world of the born to understand how to manage it. So we must look back to nature to understand how to manage the artificial. Isn't that ironic? That'll become very important in a minute. That is, the more mechanical we make our fabricated environment, the more biological it will eventually have to be, if it is to work at all. Our future is technological, but it will not be a world of gray steel. Rather, our technological future is headed towards a neo-biological civilization. Nature has all along yielded her flesh to humans. First, we took nature's materials, its foods, fibers, and shelter. Then we learned to extract new raw materials from her biosphere to create her own new synthetic materials. Now, bios is yielding us her mind. We are taking her logic. Clockwork logic, the logic of the machines, will only build simple contraptions. Truly complex systems, such as a cell, a meadow, an economy, or a brain, natural or artificial, require a rigorous, non-technological logic. We now see that no logic except biologic can assemble a thinking device, or even a workable system of any magnitude. It is an astounding discovery that one cannot extract the logic of bios out of biology and have something useful. Although many philosophers in the past have suspected one could abstract the laws of life and apply them elsewhere, it wasn't until the complexity of computers and human-made systems became as complicated as living things that it was possible to prove this. It's eerie how much of life can be transferred. Remember, we're talking about the Matrix here. So far, some of the traits of the living that have successfully been transported to mechanical systems are self-replication, self-governance, limited self-repair, mild evolution, and partial learning. So machines that are self-replicating, self-governing, self-repairing, evolution is part of their structure, and they can learn. We have reason to believe yet more can be synthesized and made into something new. Yet at the same time that logic of bios is being imported into machines, the logic of technos is being imported into life. Now, I want you to know that the bios and technos are capitalized, and when something is capitalized, it gives it a special meaning. And in my opinion, what he's saying is that these two things are the new gods. Bios, part of the old god, and Technos, part of the new god, the man-made god. And only the combination of these things will make us gods. The root of bioengineering is the desire to control the organic long enough to improve it. What does the Bible say? Hey, sorry, there's nothing to improve. Everything's perfect. Don't try. What does the law of science say? It says you'll never understand. You will never know source. You will never be able to understand what makes life. You won't. Domesticated plants and animals are examples of technos logic applied to life. Domesticated plants and animals are examples of technos logic applied to life. Folks, what does the Constitution say? Constitution says that the United States must protect the states, i.e. the people, from threats both foreign and domestic. What are we? We're domesticated animals, four-footed beasts. It's protecting it from us. What is a domestic? Well, do you have a maid? Do you have an employee? Domesticated plants and animals are examples of technos logic applied to life. What do they call us in U.S. code? They say man and other animals. We are examples, in other words. We, the common folk, are examples of technos logic applied to life. We have our brains have been basically made into machine-like contraptions. We don't think about what we do anymore. The wild aromatic root of the Queen Anne's lace weed has been fine-tuned over generations by selective herb gatherers until it has evolved into a sweet carrot of the garden. The udders of wild bovines have been selectively enlarged in an unnatural way to satisfy humans rather than calves. Milk cows and carrots, therefore, are human inventions as much as steam engines and gunpowder are. But milk cows and carrots are more indicative of the kind of inventions humans will make in the future, products that are grown rather than manufactured. I say that again. Products that are grown rather than manufactured. Genetic engineering is precisely what cattle breeders do when they select better strains of Holsteins. Only bioengineers employ more precise and powerful control. While carrot and milk cow breeders had to rely on diffuse or organic evolution, modern genetic engineers can use directed artificial evolution. Purposeful design, in other words, which greatly accelerates improvements. Now remember, they're talking about us. We are products that are grown rather than manufactured, right? Isn't that what they're talking about with all this new technology? I can change your DNA and cause you to not have Down syndrome. I can change your DNA, cause you to have blonde hair, brown eyes, whatever. So they're accelerating improvements by directed artificial evolution, purposeful design in their cattle, which is us. The overlap of the mechanical and the lifelike increases year by year. Part of this bionic convergence is a matter of words. The meaning of mechanical and life are both stretching until all complicated things can be perceived as machines, and all self-sustaining machines can be perceived as alive. Yet beyond semantics, two concrete trends are happening. Human-made things are behaving more lifelike, and life is becoming more engineered. The apparent veil between the organic and the manufactured has crumpled to reveal that the two really are and always have been of one being, really. What should we call that common soul between the organic communities we know of as organisms and ecologies and their manufactured counterparts of robots, corporations, economies, and computer circuits? I call those examples both made and born, vivisystems for the lifelikeness each kind of system holds. In the following chapters, I survey this unified bionic frontier. Many of the Viva systems I report on are artificial, artifices of human making. But in almost every case, they are also real, experimentally implemented rather than mere theory. The artificial Viva systems I survey are all complex and grand. Planetary telephone systems, computer virus incubator. What? Computer virus incubators. You're not going to have to worry about the flu, my friends, when you become part machine. You're going to have to worry about computer viruses affecting you in your biological and robotic makeup. Doesn't that sound fun? Robot prototypes, virtual reality worlds, synthetic animated characters, diverse artificial ecologies, and computer models of the whole Earth. A computer model of the whole Earth. Gee, where did the Matrix come from? But the wildness of nature is the chief source for clarifying insights into Viva systems, and probably the paramount source of more insights to come. I report on new experimental work in ecosystem assembly, restoration biology, coral reef replicas, social insects, bees and ants, which of course make up systems like a beehive, and complex closed systems, there you go, such as the Biosphere 2 project in Arizona, from wherein I write this prologue. The Viva systems I examine in this book are nearly bottomless complications, vast in range and gigantic in nuance. From these particular big systems, I have appropriated unifying principles for all large Viva systems. I call them the... Now, I want you to start listening very carefully from here. I'm going to read that again. The Viva systems I examine in this book are nearly bottomless complications, vast in range and gigantic in nuance. From these particular big systems, I have appropriated unified principles, i.e. laws, doctrines, in other words, for all large Viva systems, man-made created systems. I call them the laws of God. That word God is not capitalized because he's referring to the laws of man, laws of the creator of all this shit. I call these unifying principles for large Viva systems the laws of God. And they are the fundamentals shared by all self-sustaining, self-improving systems. Now, how is it possible that something man-made is self-sustaining and self-improving? Is that the same thing as self-evident or self-existent? No. No. As we look at human efforts to create complex mechanical things, again and again we return to nature for directions. Excuse me. Nature is thus more than a diverse gene bank harboring undiscovered herbal cures for future diseases, although it is certainly this. That's what he's limiting nature to. Instead of being the all, the end, the all-being, the all-knowing, it's nature's no longer God, folks. Nature is also a meme bank, an idea factory. You guys remember the Borg? Wouldn't this be like the book that was written before the Borg were created, and then all of a sudden the Borg, a self-sustaining, self-supporting, self-perpetuating, quote-unquote artificial life form, then looked at planets only as sources to be resourced to further the Borg and its quote-unquote artificial life, devastating entire nature structures, devastating absolutely anything of God, anything of the universe to further the artificial life structure of the Borg. This would be like the fucking book that the Borg, this would be their Bible, for God's sake. Nature is also a meme bank, an idea factory. Vital post-industrial paradigms are hidden in every jungly anthill. The billion-footed beast of living bugs and weeds and the aboriginal human cultures which have extracted meaning from this life are worth protecting. If for no other reason than for the postmodern metaphors they still have not revealed. Destroying a prairie destroys not only a reservoir of genes, but also a treasure of future metaphors, insight, and models for a neo-biological civilization. The wholesale transfer of biologic into machines should fill us with awe. When the union of the born and the maid is complete, our fabrications will learn, adapt, heal themselves, and evolve. This is a power we have hardly dreamt of yet. The aggregate capacity of millions of biological machines may someday match our own skill of innovation. Ours may always be a flashy type of creativity, but there is something to be said for a slow, wide creativity of many dim parts working ceaselessly. These last two little paragraphs are what really affected me the most. Yet as we unleash living forces into our created machines, wow, we lose control of them. What's the name of the book? Out of Control, The New Biologies of Machine, Social Systems, and the Economic World. Yet as we unleash living forces into our created machines, we lose control of them. They acquire wildness. And some of the surprises that the wild entails. This, then, is the dilemma of all... Let me say that again. This, then, is the dilemma all gods must accept, that they can no longer be completely sovereign over their finest creations. The world of the maid will soon be like the world of the born, autonomous, adaptable, and creative, but consequently out of our control. I, Kevin Keeley, think that's a great bargain. The world of the man, the world of the maid, artificial life, will soon be like the world of the born, of nature, of God. Autonomous, adaptable, and creative, but consequently out of our control. And that is a great bargain. Now that, my friends, that is the mentality you are up against. That is, for all intents and purposes, that is the adverse. That is the mind of the adversarial, right there. That is as satanic as you can get, because what is satanic? What is adversarial? What is the adversary? It's anything that's against the universe. Well, anything artificial is against the universe. I don't know how to stress this enough. The word sin comes from the word S-Y-N-N. The word S-Y-N-N is the same word as S-Y-N. Where do we find this word? How about synthesis? synthetic synagogue as the synagogue of Satan, right? Where do we find the word sin? You can't find the word sin, sin copy, sin this, sin that. You can't find that on a word that is not adversarial to the universe. Folks, I don't know how to tell you this. I don't know how to get this through your heads. I don't know how to clearly state this to make you overcome religion and legality. But what we're reading from here is exactly opposite to the Bible. The Bible being the law of nature, the Bible being a protective instrument of both yourself under that law and of nature, so that exactly what this guy is saying is a bargain and is dreaming about doesn't happen. What we're talking about? We're talking about something like The Matrix, the movie. That portrayal of a completely artificial life structure. In this case, where as he opened, how did he open the book? As if he was in a pod and his shit, his excrement was recycled by systems of ducts, pipes, wires, and plants and marsh microbes and redeemed into water and food which he can eat. What does that sound like to you? Does that sound like the moment when you wake up from the Matrix and you realize you're eating your own shit as well? That you're atrophied? That you spend too much time in the digital domain? That you have no muscles left? That you've become completely worthless as a man? Well, my argument is that most men out there, including myself, have become worthless. Why? Because we spend so much time doing exactly what we're doing. Now, I don't want to give myself an excuse. At least I've been studying. At least I've been trying to figure out this whole system. But before that, I was just as caught in this shit as everybody else, you know? Before that, I was working 14-hour days. I didn't have a family. I didn't have time for it. And the only thing that brought me out of that, folks, is the only thing that'll bring you out of it. And I'm proud to say, I'm not ashamed of this at all. I'm proud to say that I had a bit of a mental breakdown. It wasn't a full mental breakdown. It was just enough when I realized I was going through identity theft that I had 5 projects on my plate because I was becoming such a good little goyim employee for my bosses in Hollywood. When I realized I was having all these problems and then added on to that some health issue I was going through, I had a breakdown. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't keep on top of everything. I had perfect credit, and I was getting houses and shit bought and sold in my name. I was the perfect little goy citizenship like everyone else out there. And once I had a breakdown, once, instead of going on some kind of pharmaceutical drug that's going to prevent the breakdown, I let it happen. I couldn't help it. It just happened. And after that, I couldn't function. I couldn't operate in the adverse like I could before. I could see things that I didn't see before. I could feel things for the first time. And though it wasn't a pleasant experience in any way, shape, or form, it was what brought me to this point. I could give a shit what my credit score is. I will never use anything if I can help it. It has to do with any kind of credit score. My credit score will say not applicable at this point. I don't have credit. I don't want it. I don't need it. Right? I cannot be any longer in that system. Why? Because I had a breakdown, and we have to allow ourselves to break down. We have to allow ourselves to break down. Why? Well, I opened my book. I opened my book with a quote from Agamemnon. He who learns must suffer. And even in our sleep, pain that cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart. And in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom to us by the awful grace of God. The beautiful statement. What was the grace of God in my case to cause me to have such a horrible mental breakdown that all of a sudden wisdom could fucking come to me? Because all of a sudden I didn't give a shit about what I was doing anymore. Because what I was doing, I realized, was propaganda. It was artificial. It will never amount to anything. Looks good on a resume, though, which is worthless. Makes me money, which is worthless. Comes wisdom to us by the awful grace of God. Only in our despair, only in that separation, only in that breakaway, that breakdown, does that wisdom come. And I can attest to that. That is what led me on this path. That is what led me on this journey. That point was when I quit everything. Shortly after that, anyway. And I became a full-time activist, a full-time whatever I was doing. I was making a film, making a video, writing, studying, doing anything I could to learn and have that true wisdom come. That's what has to happen to each of us. I'm sorry. I'm truly sorry that is a true statement. I'm not sorry. I should say I'm empathetic. Because until you have that breakdown, what's the example? What's the Matrix example? You know, he wakes up, he has to go through all kinds of reconstruction and to get rid of the apathy in his muscles, and he finally comes out of the darkness, and they explain what the Matrix is to him, which was this legal system, this whole false artificial system. What does he do? He pops. He throws up. He passes out. He has a breakdown. Because how do you possibly fucking comprehend that you've lived a lie your whole life? Such a detailed, perfect lie. In the adverse. And allowed such destruction to the universe that you're supposed to be a part of. That takes a breakdown. But the question is, what did he learn? What did he actually learn? He learned that he was acting as a straw man. The title of my book. Hey, how convenient. So what does that mean? After all the time I've talked about it, I still don't think, you know, it took me this long to really understand the notion of it. In the introduction to Roman Law 106, written in 1881, and this was in Black's Law Dictionary, 7th edition, here's what it says. It says, by the status or standing of a person is meant the position that he holds with reference to the rights which are recognized and maintained by the law. Not by God, but by the law. In other words, his capacity for the exercise and enjoyment of legal rights. Natural rights can only be attached to something that is natural, which is man. A person is not of nature. A person is a creation of the state. It is a vessel, it is a status, and it can only exercise and enjoy legal rights. What is the word legal? In many dictionaries, legal is what is defined as that which is opposed to God and nature. This is the system, this is the matrix, the legal matrix that you must leave, according to the Bible. Now, let's go to... There was one term that I didn't put in this first book because I could never quite understand why it was relevant. Now I do. Now I do. And that term is actually men of straw. Men of straw. This comes out of Black's Second Dictionary. Men who used in former days to ply about the courts of law. So in other words, a bunch of bums, essentially, a bunch of lowlifes, a bunch of scum that used to hang around the courts. You could compare them to, and I don't mean, I take back, okay, I don't consider these people scum, okay, that's the difference. You can compare these people to the people who are desperate, looking for work, and are hanging around the Home Depot. Okay? These are desperate, hardworking people. As opposed to men of straw, who in former days used to ply around the courts of law, looking to be hired as straw men. So called from their manner of making known their occupation, which was by a straw, by placing a straw, piece of straw, in one of their shoes, recognized by the name of straw shoes. Now, when a dishonest advocate or lawyer, attorney, right, of course, I threw the word dishonest in there, but an advocate or a lawyer who, of course, is a teacher or an advocate of the legal system automatically has to be dishonest. It's not even an insult. It's just a fact because everything in the legal system is artificial. It's a lie. So you have to be a liar. You have to be pretty much scum to be an advocate or an attorney for this system. And I say that. You know, that's where the word shit comes from, by the way. The etymology of the word shit comes from shyster, which is an attorney. All right. An advocate or lawyer who wanted a convenient witness, knew by these signs where to meet one. So I look for old straw shoes, just like I need a laborer for the day. I'd go to Home Depot, not a good comparison as far as the way we see these people, but you get the picture. So an African lawyer who needed a convenient witness knew by these signs where to meet one, and the colloquy between the parties was brief. So they had a code, a language that they spoke, so that they couldn't get in trouble. They didn't speak normal speak. They spoke in code, and they said... For instance, the lawyer would say, "Don't you remember?" said the advocate, to which the ready answer was, "To be sure I do." The lawyer says, "Well, come into court and swear it." And Straw Shoes, the man of straw, went into court and swore. Athens, the ancient city, says abounded in straw shoes. So this is the original false witness, the original man of straw, which we take the term straw man. Okay? Now to verify that, we go to Black's Second for straw man. Two words, straw man. So we have men of straw, and now we have straw man. Straw man is defined as a draft or outline copy ready for suggestions and comments. It is a third party used as a cover in illegal or shady deals. A nominee director, a weak or flawed person with no standing, also called man of straw. Judgment proof is another word for this. Judgment proof is a phrase that describes the people against whom a judgment of a court will have no effect, as they will not be able to pay a debt or to meet the demands of a judgment. Who are we talking about? Who are these men of straw? The dregs of society that will literally testify against a man falsely to put him in jail so that the attorney can make some money. Or so the attorney can get his counselor or his the mayor, for instance, or some important businessman off the hook by a false witness. All right? So now we have sort of a short history of the notion of what a straw man or a man of straw is. And the question becomes, well, how does that apply to us? Well, what's the straw man argument? What's the logical fallacy that is the straw man argument? Let's see. Let me pull this up real quick here. Someone got it right. Straw man argument. Straw man argument is a rhetorical device that is meant to easily prove that one's position or argument is superior to an opposing argument. Well, you know how to do that in court is just to have three witnesses. That goes back to the Bible as well. It also goes back to land, when you transferred land with the twig ceremony, twig and turf, which was the old ceremony where you dig a hole, you dig the turf, the grass up, you put a coin under there, and you cover it up with turf, and that was how you exchanged land. Now we do it through contract. And realtors, fucking realtors. So you had three witnesses, and therefore you could prove your land ownership. It was that simple, folks. However, this argument is regarded as a logical fallacy because at its core, the person using the device misrepresents the other person's argument. The person does this because it then becomes easier to knock down the weaker version of the opposing argument with one's more substantial counter-argument. The term straw man derives from the use of scarecrows for military practice, such as charges, when in reality a scarecrow is far easier to defeat than an actual person. The straw man argument, also called straw dog or scarecrow, deliberately misrepresents and weakens the argument of the opposing side. This can be done by leaving out key points of an opposing argument, quoting a person's words out of context, or presenting a particular person's poor defense as the entire defense of an opposing side. In the worst case, a straw man is literally an imagined person who weakly defends an argument and can be easily defeated. Now notice the word person is used here. There's no man. A straw man argument is for persons. Persons are not men. Men are not persons. Person is just a status in society. It only exists in the legal matrix. It does not exist outside of any jurisdiction. There's no point in having a person if you're not in a legal jurisdiction. There is no such thing as a person in nature. The universe. Persons only exist in the adverse. And this is why the Bible, over and over and over, what does it say? It says, do not respect persons. Why does it say that? Well, because persons are straw men. It's a straw man argument. It's the personification of the straw man argument. So instead of using a straw man argument, we use a person. A man of no substance. This is what Stromanius Homo, the Latin for straw man. A man of no substance, so i.e. a fiction. One put forward for bail and surety. Well, that's what you are. You're the surety. You're putting forth this person as a straw man argument. I didn't commit the act. This person did. Well, you're the surety for that person, therefore you have to pay a fine for breaking the law, but you can go your merry way. I just made a straw man argument, but all I did was personify the straw man into a citizenship, presented it to the judge to administer, because it's the property of that well, the property of who the judge works for. The judge is therefore God over the person. And because I'm surety for the person, you know, I breathe life into it like a puppet. Well, then I'm responsible for all the fees and taxes and licenses and extortions and exactions that come from using that straw man argument, that person. That's all it is, folks. That's all a straw man is. You don't have to go further than that. But you can go further so that you do understand it. Okay, we can go to... Let's see here. Let me pull up a couple things here. We can go to... Well, shoot. I had to make one mistake today. We can go to, we'll read some Bible verses that really, you know, make you understand why this concept is so bad. But let's make sure that we understand another term for a person, for a straw man, is a dummy. A dummy! We've all heard of the term dummy corporation, but we've likely never assumed this to be in reference to our own personal incorporation to and under government. Now I'm reading just straight from my book. As it turns out, we are indeed nothing but a bunch of dummies acting in agency. What is a dummy? A dummy is one. Now, these are legal terms. This is coming from Black's Fourth, from Webster's Ninth Collegiate Dictionary, from Black's Law, Sixth Edition, Seventh Edition, and second edition. A dummy is one who holds legal title for another, i.e. a straw man. That's the definition, folks. A dummy is one who holds legal title for another, a straw man. Who does your legal title belong to? When I say I'm a doctor, okay, and I'm carrying that flattering legal title that doesn't exist in nature, who does that title belong to? It belongs to the straw man. It's not yours. When I'm a doctor and I killed somebody, and iatrogenic medicine is the number one killer of people, when you add in the fact that cancers and other diseases are man-made, are being delivered through vaccines, you know that instead of the third largest killer, it's the first. Iatrogenic medicine is doctor-related death, doctor-induced death of the patient. Well, I'm a doctor, I have insurance. So when I kill somebody, I don't really, you know, I'm not really responsible. I'm going to use a straw man argument. I'm going to use a false witness. I have a flattering title called a doctor attached to my straw man name, and therefore, because of that, I have insurance that protects me against when I kill somebody or harm somebody, which is even worse. You know, I mean, not worse, but just as bad statistically. Right? So here we are. Here we are. We now know what the person, the straw man, is for. Okay, we're acting as our own straw shoes, our own false witness. We're saying, hey, I'm this person with this flattering title, therefore I'm entitled to these rights. I've just put up a false witness. Okay? A dummy in Black's Fourth is defined as a sham. Make-believe, pretended, imitation, as respects the basis for predicting liability on parent corporation for acts of the subsidiary. Well, that boils down to the next word, agency. I'm an agent for my principal. In other words, I'm an employee of my employer, and therefore what I do is, liable to the parent corporation, right? An adjunct, a branch, an instrumentality, a dummy, a buffer, and a tool all mean very much the same thing. What is a straw man in Webster's Ninth Collegiate Dictionary? A weak or imaginary opposition set up only to be easily confuted. A person set up to serve as a cover for a usually questionable transaction. A straw man in Black's Sixth Dictionary. A front, a third party, who is put up in name only to take part in a transaction, a nominal party to a transaction, one who acts as an agent for another for the purposes of taking title to real property and executing whatever documents and instruments the principal may direct. That is the definition of citizenship right there. You being the agent operating the person. Person who purchases property for another to conceal identity of real purchaser. That's you, folks. When you buy property, you buy it in the person of another. Person who purchases property for another to conceal identity of real purchasers or to accomplish some purpose otherwise not allowed. A straw man in Black Seventh. A fictitious person. A fictitious person, especially one that is weak or flawed. A tenuous and exaggerated counter-argument. Right? So again, the counter-argument, the exaggerated and tenuous counter-argument, when put into a noun, a person, place, or thing, becomes a person. But in its real functionality, it's a verb. It's a it's a tenuous or exaggerated counter-argument. A false witness. This is what we do on a daily basis. In other words, we don't take self-responsibility. We apply all the responsibility to the straw man, and therefore we can pay a fee to commit all the crimes we want, especially if we're rich. A tenuous or exaggerated counter-argument is a straw man that an advocate puts forward for the sole purpose of disproving it. Also termed straw man argument. A third party used in some transactions as a temporary transferee to allow the principal parties to accomplish something that is otherwise impermissible. Break the law. Hey, I'll give a license to your straw man, your person, so that you can fucking break the law. What is this? License means anarchy. It means lawlessness. That's what license is. A person hired to a post or worthless bail bond for the release of the accused. What happens when you're accused? You post bail. Also termed strawmanious homo. A man of straw. And that brings us to agency. Agency is a relation created either by express or implied contract or by law. Remember, you're the agent. You're operating the straw man, the person. Whereby one party, call the principal or constituent, delegates the transaction of some lawful business or the authority to do certain acts for him in relation to his rights or property with more or less discretionary power to another person called the agent, attorney, proxy, or delegate who undertakes to manage the affair and render him an account thereof. Again, this is citizenship. The contract, the United States being our principal. The contract of the agency may be defined to be a contract by which one of the contracting parties confines the management of some affair to be transacted on his account to the other party who undertakes to do the business and render an account of it. A contract by which one person with greater or less discretionary power undertakes to represent another in certain business relations. The agent never acts as himself. The agent is the same thing as an employee. The agent is always representing a straw man. It's always representing a persona, some status that you are under someone else. You're in an undertaking. So you're undertaking an adventure of the state. A venture that's added to the person. Usually called the agent or attorney, and again, an attorney becomes your agent when you hire him, is authorized to do certain acts for in a relation to lie rights or property of the other who is denominated the principal, constituent, or employer. Now, I want you to understand, folks, when I despise attorneys, I want you to understand that you're an attorney. I'm an attorney. because we're all acting in the agency of another. We're all participating in this system. We're all using the straw man argument. We don't even know we're doing it half the time. I show my license. I show my passport. I show the, right? I do all these things. I blame my person. I say, well, I followed the legal law, the anti-God, the anti-law law. So I'm okay, right? I got a license to commit a crime. Is that okay? See, we're all acting as attorneys. That's why we're so disgusting. That's why we're such a gross people. That's why things are falling to shit all around us. Because we're not acting as ourselves. We don't appreciate our source. We're not acting as source. We're not acting as part of the fucking universe. We've already entered into a matrix in which we are the agent. Remember, in the matrix, anybody's a potential agent. Well, that's a true representation of the legal system. Anybody at any time can become an agent. Why? Read the fucking law. You have the right to make an arrest. You have the right to do anything a police officer does. You don't do it because you're scared shitless that it might backfire on you, but you have the right to do all these things. Now, I'm going to close out the show here by just reading from the Bible, because now you know what a person is. And now if you think that what I'm reading is religious, then you're a fool. Why does the Bible so adamant in every single chapter that you are not to respect persons, i.e. men of straw, strong men, any kind of flattering titles, oaths, and anything else? Why? Why does the Bible tell you this? I mean, surely you must be curious, at least, that the Bible, in so many different instances, would be so against persona, so against this artificial structure that you're acting in. So I'm just going to read from the Bible I want you to listen to this shit and take it to heart. Because this is what I mean. This is what it means to be reborn. This is what it means to die, literally, to become civilly dead and spiritually alive again. This is what the Bible is telling you. It's not telling you to freaking wear a cross or you know, it's telling you to pick up your stake, your cross, your stake, and follow Christ. Follow the law. Christ, Son, Law, Word, they're all the same words. Follow the law. The law says don't respect persons. You have to leave everything that has to do with this straw man that you've been operating since birth. You have to leave it. You have to stop pretending that the property it owns is your own. You have to stop pretending that you can pass that property to your children, because you can't. You can only pass it to their persons, which is property of state. I want you to understand, the person is property of government. It is never your own. That's why you don't decide what its law is. You're not following the natural law. You're not following the law of God. You're following the law of persons, the legal law. 1 Peter 1:17 through 18. And if ye call on the Father, remember, a king is also the father. The state is your father. The president is your father. The nation is your father if you are its citizen. In other words, false god. And if ye call on the Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work. In other words, if you go to God figuratively, up to the pearly gates figuratively, you say, hey, God, I want into heaven. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I can't let you in. You did this, 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 and this. Oh, but God, I was in person. I was a soldier. I was a Marine. I was a police officer. I was a lawyer. I was a doctor when I killed those people. God's going to be like, no, you were a man. You were my creation, and you're not welcome here. You did not follow my law. You respected these persons, these flattering titles, and you broke the law of the very foundation of the law, which is murder. You broke the very foundation of all these things. You think that just because the state gave you a license, that I gave you a license? This is the point. This is the metaphor. This is the story, the parable you're supposed to learn from these types of things. The Father. If you call on the Father, you pray to the Father, you say, please help me, who without respect of persons judges according to every man's work. Pass the time of your sojourning here in fear, for as much as ye know that ye were not redeemed with corruptible things as silver and gold, corruptible things as silver and gold from your vain conversation received by tradition from your fathers. All the shit that you think you know is vain tradition that comes from your fathers. All these religions, all this crap, nothing to do with the Bible, nothing to do with knowledge. Information is not knowledge. Information makes the matrix. Information is not knowledge. My brethren, James 2:1, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. In other words, I cannot pray to God or to through Christ if, or I cannot invoke the name as my law if I'm acting in the person of another. If I'm acting in an artificial person, in a straw man of the state, I have no access to the natural law, i.e. God. I have no access to the universe. I'm in the adverse. I can't pray to God in the adverse and expect the universe to save me. I got to save myself. I got to get the fuck out of here. Romans 2:11, for there is no respect of persons with God. For there is no respect of persons with God. God can be translated to nature, the universe, anything real. Job 32:21, let me not, I pray you, accept any man's person. Neither let me give flattering titles unto any man. That extends the whole reign. That's doctor, lawyer, that's poor, rich, wealthy. Any kind of title falls under that category. See the man as the man. Never respect the person, because if you respect his person, you're committing sin. Not that I speak in respect of what, for I have learned in what silver state I am therewith to be content. The Bible says, don't pretend to be something when you are no thing. You are part of the creation, part of the creatures. That was Philippians 4:11. James 2:9, but if you have respect to persons, ye commit sin and are convinced of the law of the transgressors. Who's the transgressors? Those who created the fucking persons and made the legal law of persons. Proverbs 28:21, to have respect of persons is not good. For a piece of bread, that man will transgress. And then in Hebrews 12:16, lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. What do? When we take personhood, we get a morsel of meat, we get some shitty rights that are actually against our best interest, and we sell our birthright. We no longer are recognized by blood. We're persons. We're artificial. We're straw. We're men of straw. We're agents. We're not real anymore. We're in the matrix. It's a legal system. It's not real. You can't expect to get anything real out of something artificial. You can't get blood from what is artificial. 1 Corinthians 5:13. But them that are without, let God judge. Therefore, put away from amongst yourselves that wicked person. Leviticus 19:15. Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person, title of the poor, nor honor the person or entitlement of the mighty, but in righteousness shall thou judge thy neighbor. In other words, judge by their works, not by whether they're wealthy or not, whether they're poor or not, whether they're dicks or not. This is these things also belong to the wise. It is not good to have respect of persons in judgment. What do you do when you go to court? You say, I am a person, judge me. You fools. It is not good to have respect of persons in judgment. Proverbs 24:23. Proverbs 18:5. It is not good to accept the person of the wicked to overthrow the righteous in judgment. Who's the wicked? That freaking judge is a false god. Literally, magistrate means god. You pray or plead to the god. One holistic system of systems. We'll see you later, folks. Ultra, y'all. Put the MK scope on y'all. If the MK hits you, it's guaranteed to open y'all. The 57mm Mark 110. 120 rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate.
make with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. For the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium to Iran. That's enriched, that's a bitch. Now we got a teacher.